Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday, December 6th, 2018. We got some NFL stuff to talk about today here on the show. Two big games to preview. Later on, we're going to talk about some fifth-year options for the players coming up from the Jared Goff and Carson Wentz draft class. Some interesting decisions to be made for teams coming up. But joining me to talk about all that, frequent contributor to the show, always happy to have ESPN's Dan Graziano here with us. Dan, how are you?
Great, Bill. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited about this week. We were just talking about it off the air. It's kind of it's been a long season, but a lot of fun stuff has been happening. We have two very compelling games, at least, if not more, but two we're going to talk about today on the show, one of which I did not think was going to be compelling come week 14. But here we are. We have the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys, which is a game for first place in the NFC East. I did not expect that before the year.
No, except, you know, the NFC East, man, like, you just don't know, right? There's not there. We haven't had a repeat NFC East champion since 2004. It's unpredictable. It's always close. The last few years, with certain exceptions, obviously last year's Eagles, Cowboys from a couple of years ago who won 13, but, you know, a lot of times it's been like a 9-win team, a 10-win team come out of that division, and it looks like that's where we're headed again this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy division. I know our friend, or at least my friend, I don't think he's your friend as well, Will Brinson of CBS, before the year said, oh, the Eagles are not going to win the NFC East. I believe you. I have no reason to doubt. You seem like you'd be good friends, but the Eagles were not going to win the...
worked together at AOL Fan House. It was, a long time ago. It's true.
Just saying AOL.
Sorry, go on.
No, please. I have been pitching for years to have a Fan House memory show, but that is not what we're doing today here on the show. We're talking about the NFC East. And with the NFC East, Will Brinson came out and said, hey, I don't think the Eagles are going to repeat as division winners in the NFC East. And of course, you can imagine how Eagles fans took that. And no, they still might repeat. It's not out of the question, but I mean, this is a much, much tougher race than I think most people were expecting before the year. And so, I mean, Dan, do you attribute that more to what we've seen from other teams in this division? Or do you attribute that to the Eagles taking a major step backwards from the team we saw win the Super Bowl last year?
I think it's mostly Eagles step backwards. I think it's Eagles hangover. I think it's, you know, they've had serious injury issues.
For sure.
Not that they didn't have serious injury issues last year, because they did. But overcoming serious injury issues 2 years in a row is, you know, is obviously twice as challenging as doing it once. So I think there's been some of that. You know, I think, you know, some of the moves they made on offense, you know, haven't worked out. I mean, Mike Wallace was supposed to play for them. Darren Sproles missed almost the whole season before coming. So, I mean, some of the plans didn't come together. And, you know, it just had, I mean, it was a magical year last year. Carson Wentz was converting third downs at an incredible rate. Then he got hurt, and they turned Nick Foles into a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And, you know, it's just what happened last year was special. I think what's happening with the Eagles this year should remind Eagles fans just how special what happened last year was, and how that's kind of the exception. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, Will's a very smart guy. You know, I would stand there on these NFL live shows in the offseason, and we're doing predictions. It's like, well, you know, this Eagles team. I'd say, well, you know, they haven't had a repeat champion in the NFC East since 2004. Oh, this will be different. This is different. This is different. People like Lewis Riddick and Bill Polian and all these guys. Like, but I mean, every year is weird, and this year is no exception. And so we'll see. They still could win it, but it's ugly.
They could win it, but even if they win it, it's not the same sort of team that we saw a year ago. And I think, like you said, I mean, they were not a team that was incredibly healthy last year, even beyond the Carson Wentz injury. Jason Peters got hurt. Jordan Hicks got hurt. They were missing some key contributors for the vast majority of that season, and they overcame it, which is incredibly rare. That is so difficult to pull off on an annual basis, and we've seen that. They have not been as effective this year. And, you know, it's always going to come down to the head coach and the quarterback are going to come in for more blame or more praise than perhaps they deserve. And I think Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson have been notable in some ways this year. Carson Wentz, maybe most notably, there was that Peter King story where the Saints said, we want Carson Wentz to win this football game, which is kind of shocking for a guy who was an MVP candidate last year. And then Doug Peterson, of course, they've lost some coaches. Some of his fourth down decisions, some of his aggressiveness has not worked out the way it did a year ago. I mean, have your sort of opinions, have your viewpoints changed on your evaluations of those guys versus the people we saw during that Super Bowl run last year?
No, I think coming into the season, I thought, you know, with Wentz especially, that it was probably going to be at least a slight step back season for a couple reasons. One, the level he played at last year was stratospheric in a lot of ways. And number two, we're still talking about a third-year quarterback who, because of his injury, did not have the offseason mm-hmm. that his development plan called for, right? Whatever the Eagles were planning to do with Carson Wentz between year two and year three. And I think it's important everybody realize, as great as he was last year, still a young player, still not a finished product, and the Eagles coaching staff certainly had a developmental plan in place for him that involved certain things between year two and year three that he wasn't able to do because he was rehabbing instead. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair to say that a step back year for Carson Wentz was you know, something to be expected or at least to be considered as possible. An offseason of rehab is a lot different than an offseason of, you know, normal practice and normal development.
Right. And I don't think that even if he's taking a step backwards, it doesn't bother me. I don't think Carson Wentz is suddenly not a franchise quarterback because he's not the guy we saw a year ago. I mean, it's just sort of natural fluctuation. I mean, I think he's just he's a guy who the Eagles, assuming he's staying healthy, assuming that nothing crazy happens, is going to be that quarterback for that team for the next decade. Yeah. And Eagles fans, I think, should still feel just as good about that as they felt a year ago.
Yeah, you'd still take him. You'd still, like, if you got stuck with Carson Wentz as your franchise guy right now at his age and what he's already accomplished in the league, his leadership, all that stuff, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, and next year could be closer to last year than this year has been. It's just, you know, but I don't know why. I don't know why anyone who's watched this league for years and years and years would convince themselves that once somebody has a good year, they will always have a good year. Like, it just doesn't work that way in any sport. And I just think it's, you know, it surprises me that that's the perspective of some people, but, you know, it is. And I assume Eagles fans will learn from this and be a lot more rational next offseason when people make predictions about their team.
Known for their rationality, yeah. Eagles fans. Yeah. Well, on the flip side of this, speaking of totally rational fans who don't ever fly off the cuff, but any decisions, you have the Dallas Cowboys who a few weeks ago made a trade. Kind of got some attention. They traded for Amari Cooper. And I think the overall reception to this trade, at least from what I saw, maybe you saw differently, but mostly ridicule, where it was, well, getting Amari Cooper is good. We understand having a wide receiver is good, but trading a first-round pick for Amari Cooper seemed like a fool's errand. It seemed like a waste of a pick for a guy who's going to be a free agent relatively soon, is going to need a big contract, and to try and save a season that didn't seem like it was likely to deliver much of anything for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, 4 weeks later, Cowboys are doing quite well. They are, in fact, now in first place in the NFC East. And Amari Cooper has been particularly effective. He has been, I think, just a game-changing player for the Cowboys. 424 yards, 30 receptions, 3 scores. He has been phenomenal for the Cowboys in 5 games. More than 150% of his receiving yards total for the Cowboys versus what he did for the Raiders in 6 games. So, knowing what you know now, do you think the Cowboys should feel better about the trade? Do you think that your opinion has changed at all? And do you think that this is sort of the new normal? Is Amari Cooper going to be this guy over the rest of the next at least year or so with the Dallas Cowboys?
So when they make the trade, I'm on the phone with one of their, you know, decision makers, and so, you know, first round pick. Yeah, it's a lot. But here's what we're looking at. We said this is a position we were probably going to look at addressing in the first round next year.
Mm-hmm.
We believe this player, very young player, by the way, was he 23, 24?
He's very young. He is still 24.
Right. So we believe this player is better than anyone we were going to get in the first round of the draft. So if we went wide receiver in the next year's first round with that pick, we would not have gotten a player as good as this player. So mm-hmm. we used the pick on this player instead. I said, well, you're going to have to sign him to make it worth it. And this guy said to me, well, that's never been a problem for us, has it? So that's the way they look at it. They were getting Amari Cooper not just to save this season, but to be their number one wide receiver for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
So Now, the rebuttal at the time was, well, the guy hasn't been a consistent number one wide receiver, hasn't produced like that. And now, of course, if he does, and as the numbers you cite indicate that he has been so far, then obviously they look like they made a smart move. But you got to remember the other thing. The Cowboys aren't going to, just because they have Amari Cooper, become this sort of air it out downfield offense. They don't want to be that. They want to run the offense through Ezekiel Elliott. Mm-hmm. They want to play dominant defense. But because they didn't have anything resembling a legitimate downfield threat in the passing game, their running game was stymied, and their defense was put in poor field position. So Cooper playing like a competent number one has mm-hmm. opened up for the Cowboys the way they really do want to play, which is hammer it with Ezekiel Elliott and you know, come after you on defense. And the formula could not have been on better display than it was last Thursday against the Saints, who rolled in looking like the most unbeatable team in the mm-hmm. league and couldn't do a thing against them. So now you have a situation where you're not only the Cowboys, you're thinking, well, we can win the NFC East, but mm-hmm. we can be a threat in January. I mean, if we can beat the Saints, then we can beat anybody, and I think they're, you know, they're justified. Now, look, if you put the game in New Orleans after the Saints come off a bye, maybe a different story. But, you know, the Cowboys would, in theory, roll in there confident they could win the game.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was sitting there saying, hey, you put the game in Dallas on a short week. I think everyone still would have picked the Saints. So, I mean, it's a legitimate, impressive performance, and this defense has been quite impressive over the last 4 weeks during this winning streak. I think 18 points per game. On defense, so you figure, well, we have Amari Cooper to make big plays. We have Ezekiel Elliott to control the clock. We have a quarterback in Dak Prescott who, for whatever his strengths and weaknesses are, fumbles are there. That's been a concern, but generally does not turn the ball over all that much on offense. I think only 12 giveaways this year, fifth best in the NFL from the Cowboys offense. So an offense that can control the football, and then a defense that suddenly, strangely, looks kind of scary. And what I find fascinating about this game, and I want to know what you think about this, Dan, is Sean Lee is coming back. Sean Lee is probably going to play in this game at linebacker for the Cowboys. He's missed the last several weeks. We know he's a good football player, but would you put him back in the lineup and take snaps away from Leighton Vander Esch or Jalen Smith?
Yeah, the way the Cowboys, and again, this is from talking to people there, the way the Cowboys view it, they believe that rotating the three of them is how to keep them all at their best. That they still believe that Jalen Smith, as great as he's played, it's a guy that has worn down a little bit late in games when they haven't had that three-man rotation in place. So that's their evaluation of it. So, yeah, Lee, I mean, they really feel like they have three players for those two positions that can give them a high level of performance. And given Sean Lee's injury history, they don't mind backing him off a little bit. So they have a plan in place to rotate those three guys. And the way all three of them are playing, it seems like that's the best way to go, is to put them in a position where they can deliver at their best. Even if it's fewer plays, you know, higher intensity, higher energy, you know, is a good thing for guys playing at that position. But, yeah, I mean, that's a story of the year, right? I mean, a three-level defense from Dallas. I mean, the secondary's played well. DeMarcus Lawrence in the front, you know, the defensive line has played well. And then that production at linebacker. Vander Esch is a first-rounder. Sean Lee's a second-rounder. Jalen Smith's a second-rounder that should have been a first-rounder if he wasn't mm-hmm. hurt. Yeah, right. That's high-level talent, and it's definitely looking like that.
Yeah, and I think at a position where I think a lot of teams aren't really valuing players. I mean, you have an exceptions, of course. Carolina pays a lot to their linebackers, but generally, look at where teams are spending money. A lot of it's up front on the pass rush, and a lot of it is on the back end at corner. You don't really see a lot of teams spending at inside linebacker, at middle linebacker, up the middle of the field, where the Cowboys, they're saying, hey, maybe we have an opportunity to get some talented players who are not making a lot of money, of course, because they're draft picks besides Sean Lee, and just we're going to control teams that way. And, you know, it wouldn't be my first idea, but hard to argue with what they're doing, hard to argue with the success they're having, and it matches up pretty well against an Eagles team that really, over the last few weeks, it seems like their best weapon, maybe their only weapon in some cases, is Zach Ertz.
Yeah, they got to cover Zach Ertz. You got to find a way to limit Zach Ertz. He's the one guy on the Eagles offense right now that has the ability, I think, to wreck the game, mm-hmm. You know, for a defense. And I think, you know, Alshon Jeffrey's had some good games. Golden Tate obviously has finally had the one good game as an Eagle. But, you know, Ertz is the guy you fear in terms of what he can do to you. And I think, you know, you're right. I think Dallas is situated to take advantage. I mean, you would not have, it's like to your initial point, you would not have said, you were sitting here in week 14 thinking, well, Dallas should win this game against the mm-hmm. Eagles. I mean, they look like the better team, but that's where we are, especially when you consider that it's in Dallas where they're 5-1 this year and they're coming off, they have 10 days rest and the Eagles have six, you know, like everything's yeah. really setting up for the Cowboys here. I know Cowboys fans are out there going, shh, don't tell anybody. You know, we don't want to jinx it. But the Cowboys are in a position where they should win this game. And if they do, they would have pretty good control over the NFC East and their own fate.
So do you think the Cowboys are going to win this game, Dan Graziano?
I do. I think I think they're the better team right now. I think they're playing better. I think they're better rested and they're at home. And I think, you know, they just seem to be in the right frame of mind. And they're able to control the game. I mean, they're back to what they were a couple of years ago on offense in terms of, you know, hey, you need a 7-minute clock killing drive in the fourth quarter, you can execute it. And that's, as to their credit, I mean, they've been playing without their all pro center all year, Travis mm-hmm. Frederick. They've managed to overcome that enough. And Elliott is a dominant player when he gets in a rhythm, and they've been able to get him in the rhythm. And I just feel like the Eagles defensively up front are not what they were last January and February. Mm-hmm. And the difference right now is enough that I think the Cowboys should win this game at home.
Yeah, 9 of our 10 experts at ESPN, including you, Dan Graziano, are picking the Cowboys to win this game. The only exception is former NFL player Mike Golic, who is picking the Eagles. So we will see.
He's
a former Eagle. That he's biased. Then we can't include him. You can't.
I don't know. I'm sure he doesn't pick the Eagles every week.
Maybe he does.
I don't know. I have to go back and check out his history.
I mean, I could buy it. I could totally buy the Cowboys winning this game. It's not like anything happened in that first game that was so unsustainable or so lucky that you would think, well, the Cowboys were lucky to win that game. They outplayed the Eagles in that game. And Zach Ertz did have 140 yards, I believe, and 2 touchdowns, but they kind of limited everybody else. So, I mean, I could see it. I could certainly see the Cowboys winning. It's going to be a close game, I think, either way. And I don't know. I mean, the Cowboys are just they're hitting their stride, and things could change, of course, but I think they are in great shape to pull away and win that game and then win the NFC East, like you said. All right, Dan, let's get to Rams-Bears here in a moment. But first, let's talk about our pals at Dollar Shave Club. And I'm in Los Angeles right now. I was traveling over the last few days, and I got to admit, traveling's tough. You don't have all your stuff at home the way you normally do. You're in a hotel. Hotel stuff is not especially great. I'm not going to lie. I snuck some Dollar Shave Club stuff in my bag, took it with me to Los Angeles, and I'm very happy I did. That toothpaste that I've been mentioning, it is absolutely fantastic. I don't want to have to go to, you know, the convenience store and spend $3 for a travel size thing of toothpaste that cost maybe 8 cents to put together. It just seems like it's a waste of money. I brought my stuff from home with Dollar Shave Club. Absolutely fantastic. My breath smells great. I have not embarrassed myself in Los Angeles. Went to the Lakers game yesterday. Nobody made fun of me for smelling bad or looking bad. And that's probably because of Dollar Shave Club. I've actually been holding my own in Los Angeles. I really appreciate that. And the best part is, just because I brought this with me doesn't mean I'm going to run out at home if I run out on the road. Because with Dollar Shave Club, I don't have to go to the store to pick up more stuff. It's going to be sent directly to me. I think actually when I get home, I'm going to have some toothpaste waiting for me. So I'm going to have some extra toothpaste. I'm not going to give it out. It's not going to be like a prize with the show. I'm not going to lie. I need it for myself. I have a lot of teeth and they all need to get cleaned, but you can get the exact same toothpaste that I use by going to Dollar Shave Club right now. And right now they have a bunch of starter sets you can try for just $5, like the oral care kit, which includes that very toothpaste I just mentioned. After that, the restock box ships regularly sized products at regular price. I don't know what you're waiting for, but you can get that starter set for just $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Get the oral care kit for your teeth and your mouth today. Now back to the show. On the flip side, in the NFC as well, we have two teams who are playoff competitors who are basically, we think, extremely likely to get in. The Rams are basically a lock. The Bears are pretty close to being a lock to get into the NFC playoffs. And heading into this game, we have the Bears coming out and saying, well, Aaron Donald is only a man, so we just have to block him. Do you believe that Aaron Donald is, in fact, strictly human material?
No. I don't.
I don't disagree with you.
The Lions last week. I think he's just. I think there's something else about him that we're going to find out down the road. That he's either some sort of advanced cyborg or an alien who has come to Earth after watching football from a great distance for years and figuring out how to perfect it. Because what I don't understand about Aaron Donald, 16 and a half sacks from defensive tackle, first of all, and we've seen the stats where he's getting double teamed like 70% of the time.
Right.
It's not just that. It's the okay, you know, you're only up three in the fourth quarter on Detroit, a team you should crush. And Detroit has the ball, and you know, guys just don't look real good. Oh, okay, there you go, Aaron. Yeah, Aaron just took the ball away from Matthew Stafford, and now we're going to win by 19. Like, it's just – and then the Chiefs game the week before, or 2 weeks before, the Monday night game, the 54-51 mm-hmm. game, you know, so many points. But if Aaron Donald doesn't have those two strip sacks, the Chiefs might have blown them out.
Right.
Like, it was that kind, those were those kinds of plays. So, yeah, I think we're looking at something incredibly special. A player that is performing his particular job, maybe at a higher level than anyone else is performing theirs, even in a league where, you know, there's quite a few MVP candidates that are worthy. And I think, you know, we have a player who doesn't even need to go to training camp and can dominate the rest of the league. I think he's special in ways that we're just really sort of starting to become aware of, and watching him play on a weekly basis is really something.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who had no sacks the first 3 weeks of the season. He basically,
yeah,
you know, kind of spotted the league 3 weeks, and then he has been absolutely incredible since then. I mean, for you, is he, given how he's playing, is he a viable MVP candidate?
I think so. I mean, like, you know, you look at the history of the award, and it's Alan Page and Lawrence Taylor, and, mm-hmm. and that's it, in terms of defensive players that have won it. So that's obviously a long time ago, and you know, Taylor was that kind of player where he went, well, this is different. What he's doing is different and transcendent. And, you know, I think there's a case to be made that Lawrence Taylor is the best football player of all time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Aaron Donald is making the case that he's the best football player in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And he's playing for the best team. And, you know, I think if you took the vote today and just knowing how it goes, I would predict that Mahomes would win it or Brees maybe. But and both good candidates. I mean, I could say Patrick Mahomes, there's nothing wrong with his MVP candidacy. It's got no holes in it whatsoever. But, you know, Aaron Donald is an outside-the-box candidate because defensive players don't usually win it. I just feel like, you know, he's got to be in the discussion, and he's got to be in serious consideration for the top spot because, you know, he changes games, and he does it – again, he does something different than anyone else has done. Like, Todd Gurley is in the MVP discussion, mm-hmm. and maybe he's the best running back in the league, but there are other really great running backs performing at something like a comparable level. There is not a single defensive tackle, maybe not a single defensive lineman in the rest of the league that's performing the task that Aaron Donald was performing at the level he's performing it. And I just think that requires attention in a way that we're not always inclined to pay it when it comes to a discussion like MVP.
Yeah, I mean, after Aaron Donald, 16 and a half sacks, you're looking for defensive tackles, interior defensive linemen. You're looking at maybe DeForest Buckner, who will play inside a chunk of the time. Matt Ioannidis is 7.5 sacks. I mean, that's half of what Aaron Donald has, less than half of what Aaron Donald has. It's just been absolutely staggering in terms of what he's been able to do. I mean, the tough part for me is this. I think if it's a down year for quarterbacks, like last year, for example, where there wasn't really that blowaway guy, if Aaron Donald was having that season this year, I think I would be in favor of winning MVP. I think Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes are playing quarterback about as well as anybody we've ever seen before. Granted, last week, Brees had a bad game against the Cowboys, and if he continues to struggle, well, that could open up opportunities for Donald. But I think if they continue to play at this same level, I think you just have to go with the quarterback just because they're so valuable and so irreplaceable in a way that I think the Rams would be able to survive. They wouldn't be great, but they would survive on defense without Aaron Donald. But, I mean, he's just this is the best defensive player we've seen since J.J. Watt a few years ago, and I think before him, you're probably considering going back to Lawrence Taylor in terms of how good and how dominant a individual one-on-one defensive player was.
Yeah, and I think there was a year, a couple years back, where Watt had a strong case for MVP, and Aaron Rodgers won it. I don't want to say it was 3 years ago. We could look it up. But I think that you're right. I mean, if there's viable quarterback candidates, they tend to win it. And because, to your point, it's the most valuable position by a lot. Like, I mean, not even close. But, you know, look, Aaron Donald's bank account right now reflects that at least there's some sentiment out there that what he's doing is close to as valuable as a quarterback. And I think, Yeah, I mean, look, Mahomes is probably going to win it, or maybe Breeze if there's a sentimental pick because, you know, he's never won it before. Mm-hmm. But I think to have the discussion without Donald as a legitimate option for the top spot, I think at this point is unfair.
I think he deserves to be in the conversation for sure. I don't think you can disqualify him at this point, given how well he's playing. And this could be an opportunity where it's a obviously a huge game, a flex game to prime time. It is against one of the best teams in the NFC, in the Chicago Bears, with a quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, who has been an incredible runner this year, has been so good at getting extra yardage. Now he's seeing Aaron Donald. That may not be quite as easy. So this could be a game where we do get possibly a massive game from Aaron Donald. If he gets 3.5 sacks and he's at 20 sacks with a few weeks to go and it's on national television, that could really propel his candidacy to the next level.
Right. I mean, what if he sets the record? What if he breaks Strahan's sack record, which he's right on pace, you know, to get right near it?
Right.
Like, does that do it? Does that mean that you have to say, well, the MVP? I mean, he broke the sack record from defensive tackle. They're not supposed to get sacked. You mentioned Ioannidis is 7.5. Ioannidis is having a great year.
Right.
He's got less than half of Donald's total. So yeah, I think beating this drum is just an effort to get people who are paying attention to pay more attention. Right. Like mm-hmm. this is. Yes, what he's doing is great, but it's great on a level that you've not seen before. And I think that's really important for people to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the Bears side of this game, did you learn anything about this team and about this offense from those two games where Chase Daniel was a quarterback? I mean, does it inform how you view them going forward with Trubisky?
I think when you lose to the Giants, you know, you definitely learn a lot about a team. although there's an interesting – if you lose to the Giants this year, it kind of triggers something incredible. The Texans lost to the Giants in week 3 and haven't mm-hmm. lost since. I think who else lost to the Giants? Because there's another team that lost to the Giants and hasn't lost since. Maybe Tampa Bay. They won 2 in a row since they lost to the – no, that's
– Tampa Bay, yeah. Tampa Bay lost in week 11 and then they won two in a row.
So the only team that has lost to the Giants and lost another game since is the 49ers.
That's
so
correct.
Very strange. But anyway, the Bears are a better team at home. They're, for whatever reason, maybe it's because they keyed on the defense and the crowd gets nuts, and on the road you don't get that advantage. But you know, Chase Daniel, they almost won the game. Giants tried to hand it back to them, but I think, you know, I think if you're Matt Nagy, getting Trubisky back just enables you to be more creative because of things mm-hmm. he can do with his legs and the ability to put him on the move in a way that you really don't feel comfortable putting Chase Daniels on the move. And I just think it opens up the playbook a little bit on offense. And, you know, he's able to scheme it. I mean, Tariq Cohen 1 week, Taylor Gabriel another week, you know, Anthony Miller might catch a touchdown. They like what they have there, but I think it works better with Trubisky just because that's what it's built for. And, you know, they're able to get by a little bit with Chase Daniel and almost run the table, but Giants somehow got him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you take that. Two road games, not against good teams, the Lions and Giants, but hey, you say, hey, we're going to go 1-1 with Chase Daniel. We're going to be in great shape to win the NFC North. I think you take that. I don't think you're too upset about that. And now you think about this game to come. Think about what the Bears do. They love throwing to Tariq Cohen, like you said. They have Trey Burton at tight end, although even throw to Adam Shaheen in the red zone. He has a touchdown last week. I mean, this is a team that wants to throw to those guys who are not going to be strictly outside receivers. And look at the Rams. They're pretty weak at linebacker. They have guys, you know, Samson Ebukam made some plays as a recovering fumbles and had that interception for a touchdown as a pass rusher. But this is a team where you can throw on them when you're throwing out those linebackers. And Wade Phillips is going to do his best to try and sort of mask those guys. But I do think this is going to be a game where you could see Tariq Cohen top 100 yards as a receiver again, just because it's the ideal matchup for what the Bears want to do on offense.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game because, I mean, the Bears, you think about what the Bears were last week. They were coming off a stretch of 3 straight division games mm-hmm. in like a 12-day span. What was it, 11, 12 days? Because of the Thanksgiving game, and they had the Sunday night turnaround,
yep.
and then Thanksgiving game. So, and they won all 3 of them. And it was, you know, Lions, Vikings, Lions, and they felt like, all right, we got to play well in this 3-game stretch to really secure control of our division. And they did it. And now, then they go on the road and play a dud against a team they should have thumped in the Giants. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing you can sort of see happening with the in terms of the emotional ebbs and flows of a season, right? They come off that 3-game stretch that they were so geared up for, and they won all 3, And now they kind of let down in a game where they're probably not as fired up for it as they were for those other three. Whereas this game, now here's a team that, you know, you're going to see again if you want to get where you want to go here. And this is, you know, best team in the league right now, and they're coming into your house. I think the Bears, you know, it's prime time. I think the Bears are going to be pretty fired up for this one. And I think coming off a loss, that might be a bad thing for the Rams that the Bears lost last week, because that might has the ability to refocus them. And getting their quarterback back, you know, this is a touchy one, I think, if you're the Rams. And I think the Bears are eager to show everyone that they belong. This would be sort of equivalent to what the Cowboys did with the Saints, right? Like, hey, don't just assume it's going to be Saints Rams in the NFC Championship game. We're going too. And we're going to have something to say about it. That's what the Bears have the ability to do here on Sunday.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of this game, I sort of hate this question typically, but I want to ask it anyway. I mean, who does this matter to more, you think? Do you think this is a game where the Bears need to win to sort of prove things to, you know, the public that they are a team that's going to be a actual team to worry about come postseason time, more so than the Rams, who are pretty well positioned to, you know, basically be one of the top two seeds and have a first round bye in the NFC?
Yeah, I think in a vacuum, that analysis makes a lot of sense. Now, I was at the Rams game last week, and they clinched the NFC West with a victory in Detroit. Didn't look great, but played great in the fourth quarter when they had to, and they clinched it. Now, they seem like a fairly focused group. Like, they talked about, hey, we still want to get a first-round bye. We still want to get that number one seed. You know, this was not our only goal. And that's the right mindset, obviously. They know the Saints are tough and that they lost to them, so they have to stay ahead of them in order to get the one seed. So it's not as if I expect them to let down because they have nothing to play for. But I think to your point, you know, the Bears have even more to play for. They're not in yet, and they're not viewed as you know, they didn't win their division last year, right? We weren't in last year's playoffs. The Rams are sort of in a more, I don't want to say the word comfortable because I don't think that's where they are, but they're in sort of the more, you know, the position from which it'd be easier to take your foot off the gas, even just a little bit of a fraction of a hair. Whereas I don't think the Bears are in that mode.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I will say this though. Let me ask you about the bigger picture for Vic Fangio, the Bears defensive coordinator. Of course, with Mike McCarthy getting fired, we've had more discussion this week about possible head coaching candidates come 2019. One of those guys who seemed like might be an outside candidate was Cliff Kingsbury, who decided to stay in the college ranks, signed with USC to be their offensive coordinator earlier this week. But what do you think about Fangio's chances of becoming a head coach in 2019? He was, of course, up for the Bears job this year. They decided to go with Matt Nagy. Nagy decided to keep, or was able to convince him to stick around. Ended up being a great decision for the Bears. Do you think Fangio leaves town and is a head coach somewhere come 2019?
I don't think you can rule it out, but I don't think I'd bet the mortgage on it.
Really?
This is a guy who's 60 years old. It's a situation where, like, if it hasn't happened for you yet, can you really expect it to? When you talk to people about him as a candidate, obviously, you know, they're impressed with his mind and his accomplishments, but there's some concern about, you know, is he kind of too low key to, you know, kind of be that, you know, that guy to fire people up on game day and throughout the week. And I think he's a guy it's not like he's new on the radar. You know, he's a guy that people have been looking at for a while. The 49ers probably should have hired him, you know, when they moved off of Jim Harbaugh and gave it to Jim Tomsula, right? That would have been the move then. And they didn't, you know? So that's weird, right? The Bears didn't give it to him last year. They brought in Nagy. Mm-hmm. So, like, you wonder at some point, there have been opportunities for this guy to be a head coach and he hasn't gotten it. And you wonder if that indicates something bigger picture that teams view as not necessarily wrong with him, but somehow less sufficient than the guys that are getting the jobs. And when you look at the age, 60 years old, when you look at the defensive guy in an era where people want a higher offense, there's a lot working against him is the way I see it.
Yeah, I think absolutely, which is kind of frustrating because, you know, everyone wants to hire the next Sean McVay, and there's one out there. He's pretty good. I don't know if you can get another Sean McVay. You would think, well, everyone's going to zig. Why don't I zag and go for someone who's the polar opposite of Sean McVay, but might also be a very talented coach? Vic Fangio, like you said, 60, defensive-minded, maybe the guy you want to have if you want to stop Sean McVay. So we'll see what happens in that sort of meta matchup as well between McVay's offense and Fangio's defense come Sunday. Now, it sounds like to me, and I could be wrong, sounds like you are leaning Bears in this game, if I'm not mistaken.
I picked the Bears. Now, I could look like an idiot, but A, I'm used to that. And B, I just, like, they're 5-1 at home. The loss was a touchdown loss to the Patriots, you know, and a game where they scored over 30.
Right.
They're a very, very tough team there. You know, they beat Seattle there. They beat Minnesota there. The bad teams they played there, they've destroyed them. You know, it was a game where Trubisky threw 6 touchdown passes against Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. who was 3-0 at the time. I think the Rams have to go east from California now for the second week in a row. They were in Detroit last week. They're in Chicago now, so a little more time on an airplane. I know I don't like time on an airplane, and I'm not nearly the size these guys are, although I'm bigger now in week 14 than I was in week 1. I just think a lot is working in the Bears' favor. And then what we just talked about in terms of the intensity, the potential for an intensity deficit, right? Like if the Bears have more reason to desperately want or need this game than the Rams do, even by a millimeter, it could be the difference. Now watch them lose 40-10 and again. But I think there's a good chance they win, and I did in fact pick the Bears.
You picked the Bears, also joined by our colleague Seth Wickersham on the Bears beat. So we will see, Dan. I could absolutely see the Bears winning this game. I think it comes down to sort of, you know, how Trubisky plays. Certainly he is a guy who we know he can run the football well. We know he can make big plays. We know he can also make mistakes against tough defenses. This is a defense that is designed to create takeaways, to fool opposing quarterbacks, to take the football away. So it's going to come down to, I think, whether he can protect the football and whether they don't turn the ball over multiple times in this game. I think if the Bears have 0 turnovers when this game ends on Sunday, I think they will win this game.
That's it, right? Trubisky can play as well as he wants, but can he hold on to the ball when Aaron Donald is tackling him in the fourth quarter, as he inevitably will be? That's the question. Just don't give him the ball, and you might have a chance.
We should have just started with that. We could have finished a lot earlier in that segment, but we got there at the end. That's all that matters. We're going to hit a break now. Going to come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined by ESPN's Dan Graziano. We talked about 2 games here before the break. I want to get to something a little more, not obscure, because it's going to come up in these. There are a lot of players we know about, but just a situation that I think teams are thinking about that maybe the fans aren't thinking about right now, and that's going to be the fifth-year options for these players who came out during the 2016 draft, who at this point in their careers, after the season, teams will get to decide, do we want to have this guy locked up for a fifth year on a cost control deal for the first, more expensive for the first 10 picks of the draft than the other 22, but basically generally going to be below market value for these guys, unless, you know, certain positions it may not be. But for most of these guys, if you're playing well, it's going to be a relative bargain. And then you can also possibly sign these guys to extensions this offseason. Those fifth year options are going to be guaranteed for injury. So if a guy like, for example, Ryan Shazier got hurt, he got paid and his contract is on the cap this year for the Steelers, even though he can't play. But if a guy doesn't get hurt, it's not guaranteed. So you could cut someone like, for example, Robert Griffin got cut a couple years ago on his fifth year option. So different things you can do, a way to kind of get an extra year on these first round picks, and a lot of guys talk about here. So let's start running through them, and I think some of them are going to be simpler than others, but when we start here with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, the first 2 picks in that draft, obviously they're not going anywhere. That's hardly a question, but given what these 2 teams have done with their contracts in recent years, do you think they will sign a big extension this year, or will teams wait, or sorry, this offseason, will they wait until the 2020 offseason to lock these guys up?
Well, I think it's possible, given the contract history, as you mentioned, with both teams, that they could both get done. I mean, the Eagles have not been shy about locking their guys up early, and the Rams, 2 prominent fifth-year option examples. I mean, Todd Gurley, Todd Gurley's fifth-year option year was 2019, and they signed him in the summer of 2018.
Right.
And they did the same thing a couple years ago with Robert Quinn, but they did it 2 years early. You usually don't see the extension until right before the fifth-year option year. I think Andrew Luck did it that way, and most guys do it that way. But so I could see them doing Goff just because that's their pattern. They like to sort of know what the guy's going to be making. Now, the numbers are interesting because this year is about $21 million for, you know, the Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota options for the guys the year before. So you're talking about maybe like a $23, $24 million one-year contract.
Right.
It's heavy, but as long as these guys aren't health concerns, and, you know, Wentz seems to be okay, then I would think they would do it just to keep them in place. I think it's kind of no-brainer. And then do they do the extension? We'll see. It probably depends on what these guys want and how significantly they intend to cash in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They're going to be around. It's just a question of do you want to time it? I think for the Rams, I think maybe you wait a year because this is might be the year you go out and you resign Marcus Peters, and you have some of the cap hits coming from those races for Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley hitting this year. You might want to wait as long as possible with Jared Goff, but he's not going anywhere. He's still going to be that guy for years to come. Carson Wentz, Eagles are in rough cap straits. They may want to wait a year, but you might give him an extension and actually lower his cap hit for this year to kind of create more space under the cap now for what you can work with. And then as some of those guys, some of the veterans sort of fall off your cap, like Jason Peters, Nigel Bradham fall off the cap in years to come, then maybe you want to increase Wentz's cap figure then. Three, Joey Bosa, again, kind of the same thing. He's going to stick around. No reason to think he's going to go anywhere. Same thing with Ezekiel Elliott at four, Jalen Ramsey at five. Any reason to think those guys?
I mean, with Bosa, he has had health issues. Now, I don't. Sure. I mean, I'm sure they'll keep him. But if there is a reason to not do the fifth year option, it's health. And if you can't trust the guy to stay healthy, so he's back now. If he gets through the season healthy, I'm sure they'll do it. But if you're talking about if he's going to be a $16-17 million option for 2020, and you're afraid he might not get there healthy, it at least gives you reason to have the conversation, right? I mean, he's a difference making player and all that. But Elliott's interesting because, you know, it's a low number, right? And, I mean, he's only making $4 million next year. Gurley deal sends it through the roof. You know, Elliott's got Fournette coming after him, Saquon Barkley coming after him. He occupies a significant place in NFL contract history. Mm-hmm. And if the Cowboys do an extension with him this year, I think that would be surprising given the other extensions they have to do. The option, the fifth-year option price in 2020 probably won't be too bad, probably like $11 million. Mm-hmm. And then they could franchise him after that. So it might be a while before Elliott gets extended. And then Jalen Ramsey, Adam Schefter had a report, I think a week ago, that they would look at trading him. But even if they did that, I would think that the acquiring team would pick up the option without even thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's going to get paid one way or another, whether it's by the Jags or by somebody else. And the Jags are in rough cap straits. They might want to give him an extension, again, to clear up some space now because a lot of veterans on that team making significant money from free agent signings that – you know, not that they're bad players, just you got to create some space. And right now they have a quarterback who's making a lot of money, who is not very useful to that football team. Second tier here, going to the draft, we have Ronnie Stanley at six, DeForest Buckner at seven, Jack Conklin at eight. Three guys I think are very solid players. Buckner especially has been kind of a quiet star. Only reason I might be concerned about any of them would be Conklin. It hasn't played this well this year as he's been recovering from a torn ACL he suffered in the playoffs. But again, I think it's just such a good deal that you have to offer these guys the fifth-year option, even with the risk of possibly running into, in Conklin's case, a bum knee.
Yeah, the top 10 pick, 2019 option was 12.5, so project that up a couple million. You'd still take the $14 million or so option on Jack Conklin for 2020 to keep him in place, to give you that certainty. And then if he doesn't play well, you can cut him as long as he's healthy. So, yeah, I think those are no-brainers, Stanley, Buckner, Conklin. The next guy is kind of an injury guy, right?
Yeah, the next three I think are really interesting because you could kind of go both ways. You have Leonard Floyd, who solid pass rusher with the Bears, but obviously has been, you know, sort of has been a disappointment in some ways. Hasn't been able to stay healthy. Has two sacks this year, 13.5 through his first three-plus seasons in the NFL, and injuries have been a concern. Noah, this would be his first full season, I believe, if he plays the final four games of the year. But, I mean, the Bears, I think you do it, but I think you're a little anxious given that he doesn't have the best history of health when it comes to his, I believe his knee has been the problem for Leonard Floyd.
Well, and then when you drafted him, right, the question was, is he big enough? Is he going to hold up? So they drafted him 9, even knowing that, so they kind of, you know, in for a penny here. I would think he probably sticks. But Eli Apple at 10, really interesting call. I mean, that's a – Giants drafted him 10, traded him to the Saints this year. And when you talk about – and so when people listen, I would think a lot of people listening to your podcast do know this, but for those who don't, the difference between the 10th pick and the 11th pick, we're both quarterbacks in this case, could be about $4 million on that option. So the fact that Apple was picked 10th and not 11th might – prevent him from having that option picked up.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a risk. It absolutely is something that it's not a lock by any means. And he's been playing pretty much every snap for the Saints since he's been traded. They basically said, you know, our cornerback is our weakest spot. We're going to plug you in as a starting corner from day one. And there's been hiccups here and there, but he's been better than PJ Williams and better than Ken Crawley. He's kind of held his own. So this is a guy who, I mean, his first year in New York, he struggled for a bit. Then he played really well towards the end of his rookie season. Then the second year was pretty much just a absolute disaster. It looked like the team was about to, you know, throw him out the door. And then this year he's been fine. So it's a, I think it's maybe you do because you don't want to commit to him on a long-term deal until you see him for a year or 2 years kind of settle down and just be a good player. And that's, he just hasn't been consistent on or off the field so far early in his NFL career.
But that's my point, though. The number's going to be a whopper, right? Like, you're talking about his fifth-year option number for 2020 is probably going to be in, like, the $14 million range.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Vernon Hargraves, pick 11, one pick later, he's probably going to be, like, in the $10, $11 million range because of the difference in the rules. That's a big difference. And
absolutely,
I think if you're the Saints, you know, to make that decision on a player you just met who's been an okay player, like you say, but not a great player, all of a sudden you're talking about putting him in upper tier, not upper tier, but, you know, close to upper tier cornerback money. I think that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, think about the Bears who didn't pick up Kyle Fuller's option, a decision everyone agreed with at the time. And he had a breakout year in 2017. He's been good in 2018. And they had to give him a big contract through the Packers offer sheet this offseason because, I mean, they didn't think he was going to be worth it, but ended up turning things around.
By the way, there is Saints precedent. The Saints did not pick up Mark Ingram's fifth-year option.
It's true.
And he performed at a level that convinced them to re-sign him anyway. So they have done this before and told the guy, prove it, and then had him do it, and it's worked out obviously well for everybody. But so it's not as if the Saints have never declined the option before and said, okay, well, we'll keep you around if you play well, but you got to do that before we are convinced.
Yeah, absolutely. Vernon Hargraves at 11, I'm a lot more skeptical of. I don't think he's going to get his option picked up. He really struggled, has had some injury issues last year, kind of hopped in the slot for a while, was benched for a bit, just has not lived up to expectations. That could be a totally different brain trust, and Tampa Bay making that decision would not shock me to see him.
Even defense, especially, right? That position's already open. So, that's a question mark for sure.
12-13, Sheldon Rankins, Laremy Tunsil. I think those guys are both going to get picked up, both solid players. 14 is Carl Joseph, a guy who was basically on the bench at the beginning of this year for the Raiders, but then has kind of come on and been at least a regular on a bad team that, I don't know, what else are they going to spend their money on?
Well, right, but Joseph was a guy that they were dangling in trade talks at the deadline, so you got the mad scientist out there, our former colleague John Gruden, and we don't know. I mean, he didn't draft the guy, and if he didn't draft you, and he doesn't expect you to be on his Las Vegas team in 2020, you're a candidate to be gone. So that's an interesting decision to watch. I just going to back up for 1 second on Tunsil.
Mm-hmm.
That gas mask video cost him a lot of money. Like, this is his option price is going to be about $4 million different than if he was picked in the top 10. And he's already made about, about $8 million less than Ronnie Stanley did on his rookie deal. So that's an interesting case. They have a steal there, the Dolphins do, but they thought they did. But in terms of Carl Joseph, I just don't know where Gruden is on him. And if he's not all in on him, then it's a guy that I don't think you can count on seeing the option picked up.
Yeah, I agree with you. 15 is Corey Coleman, who is on the back of the Giants roster. I think it's safe to say he is not going to get his option picked up.
Well, he can't because he was released. So that's already voided. That's not even a thing anybody could do anymore once you're released. Him and the former Broncos quarterback a little further down the list.
Yep, Paxton Lynch also on that, so we can cross them out. I think it's safe to say even if they could, they would not be picking up Corey Coleman's fifth-year option.
That has been
unfortunately,
once the guy gets cut.
Yes, that has been a disappointment. 16-17, Taylor Decker, Keanu Neal, two guys who have not necessarily been healthy during these first 3 years all the time, but I think two good enough players that these teams would pick up their options now.
Probably. I mean, as long as Neal comes out of this year healthy, he's been out since week one, so you assume he projects to be back healthy next year. So, yeah, I mean, unless they find something out about his injury that convinces them that 2020 is not a good bet. But, yeah, those are players that the teams are happy with other than the health situations that you raise. And then to the same point about Carl Joseph, actually, the safety price is very low. It doesn't cost much to pick up that. You're looking at maybe an $8, $9 million option. So, no reason not to.
Yeah. 18, Ryan Kelly, a guy who's really come on this year for the Colts. I don't think he was playing all that well before this year, but had really been impressive, especially during this streak where Andrew Luck decided not to get sacked anymore. Would imagine that the Colts, with a ton of cap space, would pick up Ryan Kelly's fifth-year option.
Yep, I would think so. Missed some games last year. He's missed the last couple this year, so obviously the health question creeps in, but I would think the Colts are interested in keeping that offensive line together the way it's performed this year.
Yep, Shaq Lawson at 19. Don't think that one gets picked up. A borderline player, maybe an edge rotation, but just did not get drafted by these guys. Has not lived up to the expectations coming out of Clemson.
Agreed. 8 sacks in 3 years. Just, you know, the number's not going to be huge, but they're going to want to use it some other way.
Yep. Daron Lee at 20 has improved this year for the Jets. But again, I don't know that. It depends, I think, on who is still around. If McKagan's still around, does he pick up Daron Lee's option, or do you think he just hasn't played well enough for even if it's the same sort of brain trust to keep him around for a fifth year?
I think he's played fine, but again, it comes to price, right? If the option's 8 figures, which it looks like it will be, I mean, is that worth it for Daron Lee? Is that a place you really want to be in terms of your cap? Is spending upwards of $10 million on a linebacker? I think that's the question. You know, sometimes we see these things happen. They'll pick up the option to keep him in place, and then they'll do a deal that knocks the number down a little bit. Jaguars did it with Bortles, so that can happen. But, you know, that's one to watch for sure.
Yeah, this is the same team that gave Avery Williamson 3 years and $22.5 million this offseason. So they already invested pretty heavily at inside linebacker. 21 is Will Fuller. I think this is a wide receiver run here coming up. We have Josh Doctson at 22, Laquon Treadwell at 23. I think three guys in three different places. Maybe Fuller is the exception. He's just been incredibly valuable, but just can't stay healthy. And that's a real risk for the fifth-year option.
That's the problem. At the end of this year, he'll have missed 17 games in 3 years. I mean, a difference-making player when he's on the field. But the only way the option can burn you is if the guy's hurt. And this guy's always hurt. So I think a couple years ago when the Bills were deciding on Sammy Watkins, and it was a no for them, and the reason was he had been hurt too much. They ended up trading him anyway. But they just felt like they couldn't count on him. And I wonder if the Texans confront a similar situation with Will Fuller, albeit at a lower number because he wasn't a top 10 pick as Watkins was.
Do you think that's what they do, is they consider trading Will Fuller if they don't pick up his fifth year option?
No. I'm not equating that part of the situation. Simply the option decision. That's all I'm talking about in terms of if the Texans don't pick up Will Fuller's 2020 option, I would think the reason would be that they don't feel they can trust him to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think they trade him?
No, I would be surprised. I think that, well, plus, how are you going to trade a guy coming off a season-ending injury? You're not going to get a lot of value. So I think that Bills were under new management and didn't have Watkins in their plans, whereas I think the Texans have Will Fuller in their plans. They just want him to be healthy enough to execute them.
That's very fair. 22 and 23, Josh Doctson and Laquon Treadwell. Is there any case for keeping these guys on their fifth-year options?
No. I mean, unless Doctson has a huge finish. I mean, like, they've seen flashes from him, but, you know, he seems like a limited player. It seems like they have a role for him where he can, you know, catch fade routes in the end zone and not much else. And they're going to – I mean, the rest of their season has a chance to be a total mess with the quarterback situation. So I doubt he comes out of it looking good. And I think the Vikings are kind of on their last straw with Laquon Treadwell. He's had chances, and it just hasn't worked. 52 catches and one – touchdown so far in his career, pretty much a part-time player, pretty much a bust.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't got what they've expected out of either of those guys. The only thing I would say is that just wide receivers are becoming so expensive in the NFL, and you have so many guys who are in this sort of tier who are not effective, that maybe you take a risk and say maybe this guy breaks out and we get lucky and we have a guy for 1 year at a relatively cheap cost, given that, you know, replacing someone like Josh Doctson in the starting lineup is either going to be a rookie who we don't know anything about or a guy who's going to cost $10, $12 million in free agency. It's a weird position right now. So maybe you do, but I still agree with you. I don't think it's likely that either of these guys are back come 2020.
Yeah, and then who's making the decisions, right? Is Jay Gruden safe in Washington? I think he is, but it's hard to predict that place. And then, you know, if John DeFilippo gets a head coach job, the Vikings would change the offense again. So maybe somebody comes in who likes Laquon Treadwell. Maybe somebody comes in who doesn't. So there's some factors, but I'm with you.
Yeah. 24-25, two cornerbacks in different places. William Jackson in Cincinnati. Artie Burns in Pittsburgh. Things have not gone well for Mr. Burns in Pittsburgh this year.
They've not. Yeah, the Bengals were – that was a sweet spot for the Bengals because I think they knew the Steelers liked that guy, Jackson, and so they were able to take him. One, and like, you know, it's such a sweet feeling. Everybody out there knows in their fantasy draft to, like, take a guy and then have the next guy pick and go, oh, I'm going to take him. Mm-hmm. That happened, and Bengals and Steelers being rivals. But Artie Burns, poor Artie Burns, is in the middle of a miserable year. You know, Steelers are a patient organization, And if they like the guy and see something in him, then they might not hold his crummy 2018 against him. But I would say at this point, Dan, who's more likely to be picked up, William Jackson or Artie Burns? That's not a hard question to answer.
Yeah, I think William Jackson is a lock, basically. The Bengals love keeping their guys around. I think William Jackson will be a Bengals player for a long time if he stays healthy. Artie Burns, I mean, you know, he's played one defensive snap, I think, the last 6 weeks. That was last week. The guy who they expected to be a number one cornerback heading into this year, who was, you know, going to be a part of their core. Maybe they take a shot. Maybe they say, you know, we're not going to play him if he's bad, so he's probably not going to get hurt. But they were just burned with the Shazier situation this year, and with an injury where they could not have predicted, obviously, what was going to happen would happen. So my inclination is no, but I wouldn't just say no automatically, because like you said, they are a patient organization and they might have a longer view of this than maybe some Steelers fans do right now.
Yeah, and but the thing is, they can't hide. They can hide him on defense, but you can't hide him from injury. You still got to play him on special teams, and those, you know, so you're exposing him to injury. And if you pick up the option, you're stuck with a player that you don't start on defense. That's a tough one.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch, 26, obviously not on an NFL roster right now. Kind of shocking, but that's what happened. That
who would pick it up? They'd have to call us. Hey, Dan and Bill, you want to pick up his option?
I could always use some help around the house. 27 is Kenny Clark with the Packers. He's having a good year. I think Kenny Clark's a very solid player, maybe underrated. No reason I think the Packers won't pick up that option in 27.
Yeah, defensive tackle. I mean, defensive tackle, the number will go up a little bit because of our friend Aaron we were discussing earlier, but still a very low number. No, that's a no-brainer for sure.
28, we have Joshua Garnett of the Niners, who's been a backup offensive lineman. It doesn't seem like the Shanahan Lynch brain trust really values him all that much. Think he is gone. I think he's probably not going to be on the roster, I would guess, in 2019, let alone 2020.
I think your instincts are correct there. He's a part-time player for sure.
Robert Nkemdiche at 29 was a bit of a lottery ticket for the Cardinals back when they were extremely good. They sort of figured that Bruce Arians would whip him into shape, that he would be his attitude issues or his motor issues at school would disappear. He is an incredibly talented player, but that did not appear to take and has not been much better under Steve Wilks either.
No, but, I mean, again, it's not going to cost anything. Like, what if he pops in 2019 and now, oh, boy, we got a real nice number on him for 2020. And if he doesn't, the defensive tackle number for fifth-year option this past year was $7 million. So, what are you talking about, maybe 8 or 9 if it goes up? I mean, that might be worth it for a player if you view him as a talented guy with upside, which I think they maybe still do.
Yeah, I mean, talent's certainly there. You see it for flashes for sure. He did have 2.5 sacks against the Chargers a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, we know it's there. It's just a matter of being with the right coach or in the right situation, staying healthy. I mean, it just hasn't worked out for him yet. But, you know, sometimes these guys do click after a few years. Or we do have examples of guys in the past who, someone like a Kyle VandenBosch, where not the same sort of player, but just put him in the right situation. He stays healthy for a year, has a massive season. So, I mean, the athleticism is certainly there. 30, another defensive lineman, Vernon Butler, of the Panthers, has not really been a regular for them. Has sort of been lost in their rotation. The point you made about the cost makes sense. I could see it, but I think they expected more from him heading into his fourth season in the NFL.
You know, you told me we were going to do this. I did some prep work. I have notes. I have a spreadsheet. And I have notes for almost all these guys. But next to Vernon Butler, I wrote the word shrug. So I got nothing for you on Vernon Butler.
I mean, just, you know, you kind of figure, okay, well, you draft a guy in the first round in 2016. We have a pretty old offensive line. They had Kawan Short and Starlu Tulele at that point. You kind of figure, okay, well, we're going to sign one of those guys. We're going to let one of them go, probably re-sign Short, probably let Tulele go, which is what happened. Now we can plug in Vernon Butler. We're going to be set there for a few years. And he just was not that guy. They went out and they signed, I believe, Dontari Poe, if I'm not mistaken. They did not have enough on the interior. So,
and, you know, that was a Dave Gettleman's pick, and now Marty Herney, and we don't know who the GM is going to be next year. So, yeah, that's shrug. Shrug, so I think, is the right word.
What you're saying is Vernon Butler might want to consider looking at possible housing arrangements in the northern New Jersey area come 2019.
Oh, that's a good call. Gettleman does like his Gettleman guys. That's a good point. Didn't think of that. See, there was much more to write than shrug. I did Vernon Butler's situation wrong. I did not give it the attention or effort it or you deserve.
That's not true. You can't fault Dave Gettleman for liking Dave Gettleman guys. I mean, I don't know who Bill Barnwell guys are, but I like them. I'm all for them.
Bill, Brinson, I think. Will Brinson, right? He's a Barnhill guy.
He's the one. Poor Will Brinson.
I will. I know he's listening. He's like the only guy still listening to the fifth-year option conversation at pick 30.
We got one left, and I think Seahawks fans are still listening because it's one of their favorites. Jermaine Ifedi, guy who was maybe one of the worst players in football in 2017, led the league in penalties. He's been okay this year.
I mean, the Seahawks are a developmental organization. They bring guys along. I was talking to Pete Carroll in camp, and we were talking about the offensive line. He's like, yeah. Talking about Ifedi. He goes, I think he'll hold off his challengers. I'm not sure, but I think he will. And he started for him. I mean, that offensive line needs continuity, and if he can play at all, I imagine they'll keep him around and find a spot for him. Maybe they got to move him around on the line to find his right spot. But he has not been their most significant problem this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, guy 16 penalties last year, has 9 in 12 games. I think he's on pace for 11 or so. I mean, he's been fine. And for an offensive line, given what the Seahawks have seen in recent years, fine is great. Fine is something you are very happy with.
That's a massive improvement over where they've been in recent years.
Absolutely. Well, I feel bad making you do plugs because there's no one left listening, but just in case there is, it's just for Will Brinson's sake.
No, I have people listening. That was a good fifth-year option conversation. I like that stuff. I like the nitty-gritty contract stuff, and I'm sure there's people out there that do. So thanks to all those people.
Plenty of nerds who listen to the show.
Yeah,
I'm one of them.
That's good.
So
what am I doing? I got the Giants Washington game on Sunday. Maybe it'll be my last Washington trip of the year. I keep thinking that, but that's funny. I just talking to those guys about the quarterback situation. Like they're playing for Mark Sanchez that they just met. Like, it's just bizarre. Seriously, it's just so weird. What else we got next week? I'll be on NFL Live next week on Tuesday. That'll be fun.
There we go.
John Fox, Tim Hasselbeck action. Am I writing anything? No, I wrote a lot last week when Kareem Hunt and everything happened. But we'll have our regular overreaction Monday piece on ESPN.com on Monday morning, and that's always fun. So I'm around, and you never know. If something comes up, they ask me to write a column. Barnwell asked me to do his podcast. I'm game. I'm everywhere.
And you're on social media as well.
Dan Graziano, ESPN on Twitter. Same thing on Instagram. My Instagram, I need help there. Somebody needs to help me. Like Field Yates or somebody come help me on Instagram because I need more followers. But
you said that last time.
If you like seeing pictures of like me talking to like quarterbacks who are a foot taller than me after games, just, that's where to go. Dan Graziano, ESPN on Instagram.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Yes. Dan, Will and I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, I'll be working for Will someday.
All right. Thanks so much to our guest, Dan Graziano of ESPN. Always a pleasure to have Dan on. Got to hit some different stuff today. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Back on Monday, going to talk about probably this Rams-Bears game again and some recap some other action from Week 13 on the Bill Barnwell Show come Monday, December 10th. Thanks for listening.